Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
Welcome to the Corlin Economics Report, a weekly look at financial and political topics relating to asset-based investing. Guests on this program pay no fees to appear, and guests and hosts disclose any equity interest in companies' profile. Now, the Corlin Economics Report.
Everyone, welcome in to the weekend edition of the KE Report. Corey and Chad here, your host for this weekend's edition. Also your host throughout the week on our website and podcast, helping you stay up to date with market moves, stuff that's happening in the metals sector, as well as recapping any kind of key news events from this week and how it filters in to market moves. On this weekend show, we're going to do a lot of recapping news events, data from this week, because it was a fairly busy week, all gearing up for next week with the Fed midweek, and who knows if they're going to pause or hike again. We will find out soon. In the first half of this weekend show, we are chatting with Jesse Felder, founder and editor of the Felder Report. Now, Jesse, we're recording this on Wednesday, so let's talk about a couple central bank meetings that have already happened and some that actually surprised the markets with a rate hike. We had the RBA and the Bank of Canada both hike rates this week by 25 basis points. The RBA was a bit more expected, but the Bank of Canada, they caught some people off guard. More and more what I was seeing in Canada with the news sources, it almost felt like they were trying to prep everybody for this rate hike, and sure enough, it came, and the Bank of Canada reiterated that they are still going through a form of QT. Now, Jesse, how important are these smaller central banks, but the fact that they both hiked rates and the Bank of Canada hiked rates after being paused for a couple meetings?
Well, from my perspective, it puts more pressure on the Fed. I think all of these central banks are under pressure to appear as if they are doing enough to combat inflation, to actually bring it in a sustainable way, right? There's a history of central banks doing enough potentially to bring in inflation on a cyclical basis, but not to do enough to stem a potential, you know, rise in inflation over a longer period of time. And so I think that, you know, and Jay Powell's talked about this, that, you know, the risk is not doing enough. And, you know, that's the biggest risk right now. And so I think when, you know, for right now, so long as they're, you know, markets are fine and financial stability looks okay, we don't have problems in the regional banks anymore. You know, the Fed, you know, and central banks generally will feel pressure to err on the side of tightening too much in order to really address that issue of secular inflation.
Well, Jesse, with so many expectations based around what the Fed can do and what other central banks can do, we've seen interest rates rise and the dollar rise. What do you make of rates going higher along with the greenback lately?
Well, I think, you know, from my perspective, the bond market, you know, should have been rallying over the past few months more than it has. Right? We saw a peak in rates a few months ago, but bonds haven't really been able to rally. If you look at things like the copper to gold ratio, I look at, you know, the cyclically sensitive sectors within the stock market. You look at like retail and material sectors have been so weak relative to the S&P 500 that it points to a, you know, real slowdown in the economy, potentially heading for recession. That should be bullish for bonds. We should see rates probably come down on that news. The fact that rates have not been coming in, and a day like today, you know, rates are actually rising again, it suggests to me that the Treasury market is more concerned about liquidity right now than fundamentals. And that, you know, is simply the fact that the Treasury, now that the debt ceiling has been lifted, the Treasury has tons of supply coming to market. And, you know, that's probably going to lift interest rates in the short term. So, yeah, that creates demand for dollars, because if the Treasury is going to sell $1 trillion worth of T-bills, they're probably going to have to pay close to 6% interest on those. And that's very attractive, I think, to a lot of different investors.
Do you think that's a good balance, though? If investors can get around 6% on treasury bills, gives them another alternative for their portfolio, but understanding that they don't want to just go all in on treasury bills, so investors are in a way kind of balanced here in treasuries, but then also in really just a select few stocks in the market.
Well, I think, you know, it's a big question, right? We've seen the stock market rally significantly, basically on the back of the seven big tech names, you know, the biggest tech names in the market, the Apples, Microsofts, you know, Nvidias of the world. So that's created a really poor underlying breadth condition in the stock market, right? Where these seven or eight stocks have done really, really well, and the rest of the market has actually done fairly poorly. Like I mentioned a minute ago, retail especially poorly, but you know, material stocks, transportation stocks, a lot of these, you know, cyclically sensitive sectors have been very, very soft. Now, I think you can tie in that breadth dynamic, that weak breadth, along with the liquidity situation. And this is something that, you know, Walter Diemer, who's a technical analyst who's been around markets for a very long time, wrote about this. And hat tip to Helene Meiser for pointing this out last week. But he pointed out that, you know, in bull markets, vigorous bull markets are kind of characterized by large quantities of money flowing in. So large that it puts stocks up almost across the board. You see everything go up together. That's a sign of really healthy breadth, really healthy liquidity in the market. When you get to kind of the tail end of a rally or a bull market, you see breadth wane, right? Fewer and fewer stocks going up. And that's basically a reflection of less liquidity in the market. And I think that's exactly what's going on. As we've had this kind of counter trend in liquidity where, you know, the Treasury had to draw down that TGA, the Treasury General Account, because they ran up against the debt ceiling. And the Fed stepped in to rescue the regional banks, and that boosted the balance sheet in a short period of time. Those two liquidity measures helped the stock market rally and risk assets generally. But now those are shifting, right? The Treasury now has to go sell, you know, refill the account. I guess they want to, you know, be up to about $500 billion in that TGA by the end of this month, or at least $400 billion. And the rescue of a regional banking sector is essentially done, and the Fed has unwound that expansion of the balance sheet. It's right back down to where it was before that. So liquidity's shifting. I think that when you look at breadth in the context of liquidity, it helps to understand what's going on. There's less money flowing into the stock market generally. That's being reflected in the very weak breadth numbers that we're seeing.
Well, and Jesse, we flagged the weak breath for a long time on the show. It seems like a very bifurcated market where people are piling into mega cap tech stocks almost as a safe haven in uncertain waters. So are we getting ready to head into a recession in the second half of this year, as so many messaged?
Well, it's funny that people are pointing to the labor market as an indicator that we're not in recession, because the labor market is famously a lagging economic indicator, right? By the time recession is reflected in labor, you're already well into recession, and it's already well reflected in the prices of risk assets. So by the time we get the unemployment rate above 4%, you know, on an average, whatever, 3-month average or 6-month average, or whatever economists like to look at, stock prices will already be significantly lower. That's just the nature of the beast, is by the time lagging indicators already show it, the stock market is a leading economic indicator. But I would say, as Stan Druckenmiller famously said, it's the inside of the stock market is the best economic predictor that he's ever seen. That's, you know, quoting Stan. So it's not just what the stock market is doing, the major stock market averages. It's what's the inside of the stock market? What's the relative performance of these cyclically sensitive sectors, like I mentioned before? And one of the ones, you know, he mentioned in this quote is the Russell 2000. What's the relative performance of small cap stocks? And it's been absolutely terrible. To me, that's a very clear sign that, you know, the economy is not showing any sign of bottoming.
All right here, Jesse, we're out of time for this segment on the radio, but we're having you back on next segment, so everyone stick around. We're going to be right back.
Al Corlin's firm, A.B. Corlin & Associates Incorporated, provides consulting services to public companies on matters of regulatory compliance. To find out more, follow the link from www.kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back after this brief timeout.
you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Any time, any place, anywhere, radio remains the most intimate of all forms of media. At home, at work, in the car, on smartphones. Over 90% of consumers still listen to radio every week. That makes choosing radio as a place to advertise your business one of the best decisions you can make. Email advertise@gcnlive.com and partner up with an experienced GCN representative. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau de Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus does not grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system, and it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. The tea is also organic and naturally caffeine-free. A one-pound package of tea is $49.95, which includes shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. The first word is shop, spelled S-H-O-P, then the word super, and then the word tea. The complete website is shopsupertea.com or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. California time. That's 818-984-6100. Shopsupertea.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
Have you heard the warning from the dead doctors don't lie guy? I'm talking about Dr. Joel Wallach. He says if you have a 4-inch medical chart, if you take prescription drugs for high cholesterol or high blood pressure, arthritis, joint pains, or other health issues, the medical profession is failing you. They're using you for an ATM machine. That's what he says. He has a free lecture revealing what pharmaceutical companies don't want you to know. There's been groundbreaking research and discoveries on how to effectively treat or eliminate over 900 different diseases naturally. And it's all in his free lecture called Deadly Recipe. You want it free? Call him toll free at 855-79-YOUNG. You ready? 855-79-YOUNG. Dr. Joel Wallach, the dead doctors don't lie guy, says there's no reason why we shouldn't live to be at least 100 and have a great time getting there.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
Your weekly fix on finance and investing. This is the Cortland Economics Report.
All right, welcome back. We are continuing to chat with Jesse Felder. Now, Jesse, could investors be betting on the fact that sometimes markets simply just diverge from the underlying economic fundamentals, and maybe this recession that everyone's been waiting for has taken so long to develop that, you know what, they're going to put their money to work somewhere, so why not put it into the broad averages or simply just park it in the tech stocks?
Yeah, I mean, if you traded through the 2002 to 2002 period, you saw people do this time and time again. We had so many rallies where the stock market rallied, NASDAQ rallied 20 to 30%. And everybody thought, oh, this is the bottom. And then the economic data continued to trend lower. And it turned out it wasn't the bottom. And stock prices not only, took out those previous lows. They not only gave back all their gains, they took out the previous low and went on to make lower lows. And so I think, what's happened is there's some recency bias where people think their idea of a bear market is the 2009 experience or it's the 2020 experience. It's a brief but sharp crash or deep correction in stock prices and then an immediate rebound and move to new highs. Now, that was exactly what happened in 2020 and in 2008, 2009. It took a little bit longer, but there was a V bottom in the stock market back then. And that's what people look back to and expect that's what's going to happen again. But that's not the case with the typical bear market. The typical bear market and economic recession is more drawn out. And there are false dawns where people get excited about trying to play the potential for a bottom in the economic data and get ahead of it. But I think we're, traders are being, who are playing that trade are way too optimistic, that it's way too early to see any potential signs of a bottom for earnings or the economy in the near future.
Well, Jesse, another point that you've drilled home in some of the pieces you've written deals with, the potential of an earnings recession and that we're already in one. And when you look at just how the first quarter earnings reports went, a lot of publicity was given to some of the bigger companies, but when you dove under the hood, I think it was something like 75% of the companies had about a negative 10% earnings. And so it wasn't a pretty picture when you look at the majority of businesses. And when you look at some of the PE ratios we're seeing, especially, we've highlighted on the AI craze that NVIDIA was up over a 200 PE ratio. It's now come down to just a minuscule 197 PE ratio. When you look at these earnings ratios, they're pricing companies for earnings forever, and it doesn't seem like anybody cares about these valuations. And you brought up some other statistics involving the M score and some other things to us off mic that I'd love you to unpack about how you're viewing the potential earnings recession building speed as the year develops and moving into next year.
Yeah, well, the forward operating PE ratio of the S&P 500 is about 20 times right now. So stocks trade about 20 times operating earnings. Over the past 10 years, the average has been about 17. And that's based on the analyst estimates of the forward 12-month earnings for the S&P 500. Now, you have to so we're essentially, 4 points above average right now in terms of valuations. But you also have to look at that's based on analyst estimates, which expect earnings to be bottoming this quarter and then begin rising significantly over the next several quarters. So if earnings do that, right, then stocks are potentially have already priced that in, right, a dramatic bottom and rebound in earnings. Now, the problem is if earnings aren't bottoming right now as we speak, if earnings are going to continue lower, and there's a number of indicators, like you mentioned, the M score and things that suggest that they're headed lower, then it's going to turn out stocks are significantly overvalued. Because if earnings go down another, 10, 15, 20% instead of rise 10, 15, 20%, and then you put a 17 multiple on those lower earnings figures, you're talking about something like 3,000 on the S&P 500 instead of, 4,200, 4,300 where we are today. And that's a major difference. It just shows you the potential for disappointment. Now, to come back to those, leading indicators of earnings. There's several you could look at. That M score is one. Is basically just a measure of earnings quality. And it hit in this last quarter, it hit a 40-year high in terms of the probability of earnings manipulation. And this measure always rises, heading into a recession, because what it reflects is companies feeling the pressure about, slowing top-line growth, rising costs, really pressuring earnings. And so they start you're manipulating different accounting things that they can manipulate to make earnings look better than they otherwise are. For example, Google in its last quarter extended the depreciation duration of, a lot of their cloud assets and things like that, which boosts earnings in the short term, but it doesn't reflect, the trend in the underlying business currently. So when a bunch of companies are doing these types of accounting gimmicks, it's a sign that we're potentially in the early stages of an earnings recession. Another, I guess, confirming measure of that would be the gap between NIPA profits and S&P 500 profits. When you see that gap widen to the extent that it has in the last couple of quarters, it's always a sign that we're heading into recession, because NIPA profits reflect real corporate profits, right? Not manipulated. And S&P 500 profits are, manipulated, that reflected in that M score. So we see NIPA profits peaked, a year ago and have been rolling over significantly. S&P 500 profits always follow. This is always, also a really good, I think Charles Gav has showed this is always a really good indicator of recession too, confirming a lot of other leading indicators. So there's all types of things like this to show that markets are pricing in a bottom for earnings right now and then rising again through the end of the year. A second half recovery is essentially what analysts are forecasting. Now, if that doesn't happen and earnings continue lower, there's going to have to be a significant repricing in stocks.
Okay, so it really sounds like, Jesse, you're thinking the second half of the year is going to be quite tough for the stock market broadly. The broad averages should come down quite a bit. Will it be a fast move? Will it be a grinding down move? And quite frankly, is that money going to rotate anywhere? Or is it just going to go to money heaven?
I do think we are seeing a rotation. The rotation we've seen this year was out of, it's been out of energy. We've seen record weekly flows into tech funds, right? This is mind-boggling to me that the flows we've seen recently are bigger than anything we saw in 2020, 2021, during that kind of meme stock blow-off and the speculative euphoria in 2021. We've actually surpassed that. The amount of call buying that we've seen in the S&P 500 and in NVIDIA and some of these popular things is hitting records. So the speculative euphoria is back, and when that goes away, yes, stock prices are going to roll over significantly. I do think we are in more of, as I mentioned, we're not in that type of a 2008-09 crash. We're in more of kind of a rolling bear market. So I do think we could see the rotation back the way we saw last year. Money this year has flown out of energy into tech, and I think we could see it flow back the other way, back into that rotation that kind of characterized 2022.
All right, Jesse, we're going to wrap it up here, but everybody listening on the radio, we do continue this conversation with Jesse Felder, so please visit our website, kereport.com, or podcast, the KE Report, to listen to that full interview.
To find out more about today's guest, visit us on the web at www.kereport.com. You're listening to the Corlin Economics Report. We'll be back in a moment.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
If you're concerned about the power grid and want to generate your own supply of off-grid electricity, this will be the most important message you'll hear this year. Here's why. We now have a small number of solar generators back in stock. These emergency backup systems provide life-saving backup power when you need it most. And unlike gas generators, solar generators run quietly, emit no dangerous fumes, and produce an endless supply of free electricity from the sun. Whether it's wildfires, dangerous weather, power grid issues, or just getting off the grid, you'll never have to suffer through painful power outages again. Even better, all this week, radio listeners get over $700 in free off-the-grid bonuses, too. Go to MySolarBackup.com to learn more and check availability. That's MySolarBackup.com. Look for the free report, Crisis Cooling, how to make absolutely sure your meat, milk, and medicines stay safe and cool in any power outage. Yours free at MySolarBackup.com.
USA News. News update. New lawyers hired by former President Trump hard at work this weekend preparing to fight the 37 felony count indictment. Correspondent Brad Siegel with details.
The department says Trump stored classified information, including U.S. nuclear programs and defense and weapons capabilities. He's set to appear in court Miami on Tuesday. He denies the charges.
More violence to report out of San Francisco, where 9 people shot and injured at a block party in the city's Mission District.
With this incident, we believe that it was a targeted and isolated incident.
This is a national phenomenon. People come from all over the country.
And the race will go on. The Belmont Stakes, the third leg of the Triple Crown, is scheduled to take place in Queens tonight now that the air has cleared after the massive smoke earlier in the week from the Canadian wildfires. New York Governor Kathy Hochul.
It's huge for the local economy.
Laura Winters, USA News.
You don't sit behind a desk every day to earn a living. You're out and about making it happen. And sometimes you get a little bit behind on your paperwork, you know, like bookkeeping and paying your taxes. It's easy to get behind on paying your taxes. It happens to the best of us. And you know what happens next. The big bad IRS comes knocking on your door. And when that happens, you need to call the good old boys at the Tax Doctor. Let them do what they do best. Deal and negotiate with the IRS so you pay the lowest you can in back taxes that the law allows. We are a 100% U.S.-based company, and we've saved our clients millions over the years in back taxes. If you owe $10,000 or more in back taxes, call my friends right now at the Tax Doctor and learn more.
800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. 800-507-3137. That's 800-507-3137.
I had no idea it would destroy my life. But before it happened, I had a successful business in Austin, Texas. Everyone laughed at me when I shut that business down, but I could not ignore the wake-up call. I was volunteering on a project to get locally grown food into a school. That project was a complete failure, and I discovered that there were few local farmers. There's only 4 days worth of food in the grocery stores, and everything comes 1,500 miles via a just-in-time trucking system. I lost friends and family who told me I was crazy to worry about that, but I kept at it. I'm Marjorie Wildcraft. Those of us who know what's going on in the world know you need to become self-reliant before the dollar collapses. I've created a free webinar at gcnfood.com. I can show you, like I've shown hundreds of thousands of people, how to grow lots of food, even if you have no experience, you're older, or you're out of shape. Do it now, before the stores are boarded up and food is not available at any price. Go to gcnfood.com. gcnfood.com.
Providing unique reporting on markets and companies since 1990. This is the Corlin Economics Report.
All right, welcome back here to continue on with the weekend edition of the KE Report. In the second half of the show, as promised, we're going to be balancing out some of Jesse Felder's comments in the first half of the show with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex, also editor of the Mark II Market website. Now, in the last couple of segments, we heard, as I said, from Jesse Felder taking a look at the economic data and really his predictions for still that recession and market drop coming in the second half of this year. Now, Mark, I wanted to, at least in this first segment with you, just recap all the news from this week, the news and data that moved markets. We can start with the jobless claims, because in the U.S., the jobless claims came in higher than estimates, 261,000 compared to the estimate of 235,000. This did cause some market volatility. We saw the dollar drop. We saw gold move higher. We saw U.S. markets just continuing to grind higher as they have for the last number of weeks. Mark, let's start with the jobless claims. Is this the start of more weakness in the job market in your eyes?
Yes, I think you're right. I think that the job market is slowing, but I think that this past week's jump, I think it was about 12% jump in initial jobless claims, I think that's a bit of a fluke. Here's why. Is two things seem to be distorting them. First, we have the Memorial Day holiday late May, so that's one factor. And the other factor is there's a huge strike going on in the U.S. West Coast ports. This affects something like 22,000 workers. The strike is it's kind of interesting in the sense that these workers have been going without a contract for, I think, the year now. And they've agreed on some issues like what, how to deal with automation and healthcare issues, but they're stuck on the pay issue. And the union wants 7.5% pay increase, retroactive to when the contract ended. And they want the 7.5% pay increase for every year of the new contract. And so the employers aren't agreeing to this, and so hence the strike. And this is a kind of an interesting thing because there's going to be a disruptive as far as thinking about the supply chains, and you think about deliveries and the shipping. And what happens is that you think that many of the ships would go. They say, okay, we can't get into the West Coast ports. We'll go through the Panama Canal and get into the U.S. Gulf or even the East Coast ports. The problem is that the Panama Canal is too low, and this is requiring ships to empty out, so, you know, to lighten up their loads to go through the Panama Canal. And so this is turning into a bit of a bottleneck, and the net effect of it, one is the supply chain disruptions, which is also inflationary. So bottom line here on the weekly jobless claims, I'd like to see another week or two to smooth out the distortion caused by Memorial Day and also that strike activity. But I do think in the bigger picture, the labor market is slowing, and it's just still very resilient, but it's slowing.
Well, Mark, another theme from this week is really in the U.S. general equity markets, some strength, more strength than many were expecting. I saw a lot of calls this week for the bull market is back engaged again in the general markets. There's a lot of optimism from investors. The markets have, especially the indexes, have done incredibly well. And even throughout the week, we actually saw, instead of it just being focused on narrow mega cap tech leadership, that some of the market breadth broadened a little bit. You saw sectors that have been beat up for a while finally get a bid. What do you make of this, I guess, overall optimism in the general equity markets in the week that just passed?
Yeah, so I think that this move up in stocks really, to me, began like middle of March, and I think that it's being driven by really interest rate expectations. So whether the Fed raises rates one more time or not, I think the market feels comfortable that the U.S. is not like a semiconductor chip where we have to measure things in nanometers, like the thickness of or the width of a hair follicle. Instead, I think that the market accepts the idea that 25 basis points one way or the other doesn't make a difference. The Fed's nearly done. And so then we got to begin talking about when to get the first Fed cut. And still, even at this late date, the year-end Fed funds rate, looking at the Fed funds futures market, is still talking about, it's still looking like it's pricing in a 25 basis point cut. So I think that there's this optimism, and I think this is what typically happens, right? You sort of, the markets respond differently to the first hike in a cycle than to the last. And so I think that this is interesting, but I'm still concerned, though, about the market getting a bit ahead of itself. We've already had, when you think about it, we've already had a pretty big rally this year. In my mind, I mean, this is the kind of rally that, you know, that we'd be happy with for the full year. I mean, we're talking about the NASDAQ up 26%. Almost 27%, the S&P 500 up almost 12%. And so this is what we've done in the first half of the year, and I think most of us would be happy if we were told this in Christmas, last Christmas, that the stock market would be up like it is in the first half of the year. We'd be all happy with this for the whole year. So I am concerned about getting a bit ahead of itself. The economy's going to weaken, and that's going to really pose a challenge for earnings growth.
Yeah, those year-to-date numbers are strong, but just go back to the start of Q4, too, and, well, the numbers get even bigger. The S&P is up about 20% from the bottom it put in last year. But you know what? There are a lot of people saying this is just a rally in a broader bear market. Yes, it's taken back about half of the losses that the markets experienced for almost that one-year period last year. But now we've also seen sentiment switch a little bit towards more bullish. We see that when markets go up, people chase markets, they get sucked in. Do you care at all about some of these sentiment indicators that have now moved bullish?
Yes, I think that, you know, it's hard to, you know, people come up with these numbers of what a bear market is, what a bull market is. And with the S&P 20% off its lows, I think that brings in money partly because of that FOMO, right? The fear of missing out. And I think that's what helps keeps us chasing the market. And remember, a lot of Americans are putting money in every paycheck through their 401ks, almost a form of dollar cost averaging into the stock market. And I agree with you too that last year the wipeout forced a lot of people out of the market, and now they sort of have to chase it at higher levels. I am concerned, like I say, it's not just in the U.S. either. We've seen some big rallies. Japan, I think, is near a 30-year high or so. The Nikkei is up over 23% this year. The European stocks have rallied. Emerging market stocks have rallied. I think that this is partly the idea that the growth cycle's peaked and interest rate peak will come shortly after that. And then we get the stimulus again to help lift the stock market, lift the economy.
So, Mark, isn't it the story that we're in for a lot of markets and sectors is this range-bound trade as we are seeing central banks pause? Yes, we did get a couple rate hikes this week, but broadly everyone's expecting a pause. Is that just what we're in for here, is markets that maybe are just a bit more range-bound, buy the lows, sell any of the highs, or when you get close to any breakouts?
It's interesting. I mean, I think it all depends on, like, and this is where I think a lot of investors, their challenge is to be true to their time frame. You know, if you're, you know, as a trading proprietary at banks and my own personal account, I know what happens. You buy something, you think, okay, this is just going to be a short-term news event, and it works against a news event or something, you know, a short-term trade, it works against you, you begin putting into your long-term bucket. And I think it's better to just stay true to the time frame. And so what could be a trend for, say people who trade for, you know, at a month view at a time, you know, what could be a trend in 1 month could be really, for the longer term, 6 months or a year, could really just be in that range. So I think it all depends on one's time frame. But I am concerned that, you know, the markets do tend to exaggerate in both directions. But I'm seeing, like, in the currencies, too, an interesting one here is the Mexican peso. The dollar fell to new 7-year lows against the Mexican peso this week. And when we previously, when we saw it fall to new lows, there would be follow through selling. But now what we're getting is getting a bounce back. Like, the market's getting nervous, and as we make new highs for the peso, new lows for the U.S. dollar, profit taking sets in because everybody, their sisters, seem to be long some of these trades. And I think that they're sort of playing for stronger levels, but taking profits quickly when the dollar hits new lows. So my guess is we're going to go towards 700 on that peso, which we haven't seen since 2015. But as you go there, people are going to be quick to take profits along the way.
All right, everyone, we're out of time for this segment, but we're having Mark on next segment, and we're going to do a little looking ahead to next week's key central bank meetings, as well as big economic data coming out.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
What if you've seen crazy diets to lose weight? At GCN Team, our Healthy Body Weight Loss System simply neutralizes the body, bringing down cravings. It has been proven that nutritional deficiencies drive appetite for carbs, sugars, and fats. Lose weight the easy way. Find us at GCNteam.com or call 877-878-4203. Fighting cravings is a fool's game. Give the body what it needs to be satisfied. Again, 877-878-4203. That's 877-878-4203.
Hi, this is Jason Hansen. I'm a former CIA officer and best-selling author on safety and preparedness. The fact is, things are getting downright scary for everyone who's storing their wealth in the banks. We just saw the collapse of 3 major banks, and I would urge you to consider protecting your wealth ASAP. If even a tiny percentage of Americans attempt to withdraw their savings, we would see a collapse of the entire banking system, sending us into a modern-day Great Depression. Fortunately, there is a way for you to avoid this. It starts with contacting Advantage Gold. If you have an IRA or 401k, Advantage Gold can help convert those paper assets into physical gold and silver. This is the process that I recommend everybody use as a hedge against rapid inflation and to protect your retirement wealth from the banks. Take control of your financial safety today. Call 800-900-8000 to get your free gold investment kit from Advantage Gold. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000.
Advantage Gold is not an investment advisor or a tax advisor. Consult with your financial advisor before investing.
Call 800-900-8000.
No other network provides the level of customer service we do. When it comes to radio advertising, we are your one-stop shop. And no matter how big or small your business is, we can help. Email us at advertise@gcnlive.com and an experienced advertising executive will help you take the first step towards driving more customers to your business or website. Advertise@gcnlive.com. Easy, affordable, effective.
Jose works on a farm. Safety is important. His boss calls 811 to determine where it's okay to dig. This protects Jose from hitting an underground line and from serious injury. Because Jose can't tell exactly where or how deep the lines are, he doesn't dig until 811 tells him it's safe. The most important thing is that Jose works safe and goes home to his family. For more information, visit farmsafe811.org. A message from the Pipeline Operators for Ag Safety Campaign.
I need help with my taxes. Where can I find free tax help?
If you make $54,000 a year or less, you can participate in the IRS Volunteer Income Tax Assistance, VITA, or the Tax Counseling for the Elderly, TCE, programs. IRS-certified volunteers provide free basic tax prep for low to moderate income taxpayers. The TCE program is specifically for taxpayers age 60 and older. Go to IRS.gov and enter free tax prep in the search box to find a VITA or TCE site near you.
Airlines have just reduced their prices even more. Book 30 days in advance and save big.
Want the absolute lowest prices on your airline tickets? Then call the low-cost airlines travel hotline right now for prices so low we can't publish them anywhere. The only way to access our low rates and save up to 70% is to call. Save hundreds on your vacation tickets by calling right now. You can fly anywhere in the world and pay discount prices on your airline tickets. Book a flight today to London, Paris, Madrid, or anywhere else you want to go and pay a lot less guaranteed. Call the International Travel Department right now at Low Cost Airlines.
802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. 802-341-4535. That's 802-341-4535.
Hey everyone, welcome back. We are wrapping up the weekend edition of the KE Report. Still chatting with Mark Chandler, managing partner at Bannockburn Global Forex. And Mark, it's time to look ahead to next week. We have a couple key central bank meetings, including the Fed, ECB, and Bank of Japan. We also have some economic data out of the U.S., as well as some moves in the Treasury market. So let's start with the Fed, and as much as we've heard from some of the Fed presidents, as well as Jerome Powell, it looks like the Fed is going to pause. Some people are going to call it a skip. Do you think we get any surprises out of the Fed meeting next week?
Yeah, so the Fed's going to be an interesting meeting. Partly the Fed is also going to provide new forecasts, a new summary of economic projections. So I think that, like I was saying, I think a lot of us were looking for a rate hike, and this pushback from the Fed's leadership. Now I think people are talking about a pause. I think that some people are trying to phrase it as a skip. And a skip only makes sense. You know, you skip June to raise rates in July, but if you know you're going to raise rates in July, what's the point of skipping? And so I don't think the Fed's going to talk like that. I think the Fed's going to, I think Powell's going to be clear that all that decided was that at this week's meeting, you know, he's going to say that we decided to pause, and he's going to underscore that doesn't mean that the Fed is done. It's not necessarily mission accomplished. It's just a pause. And I think he's going to drive home that as a hawkish pause. By a couple of things. One is that the forecasts are likely to revise up GDP and likely to revise down the unemployment rate. So that'll help drive home the point that the Fed still sees the economy as being resilient. And secondly, I don't play up this differences of opinion at the Fed, despite by measures that we've come accustomed to thinking about diversity and inclusion, this is one of the most diverse Federal Reserves. Yet Powell has done an amazing job keeping everybody out of the same, singing out of the same prayer book, so to speak. But this time I think that there could be a dissent if the Fed pauses. There's been several presidents, a couple of governors, but I would look more for a dissent from a president, a regional president, in favor of a rate hike. And so the takeaway is going to be a hawkish hold, and the market's got about an 80% chance of a July hike priced in. So I think that's really the story with the Fed. But, you know, the morning the Fed meets, we're going to get the CPI number. And the CPI, you know, it's not like rocket scientist stuff here. But what happened is last May and June, U.S. CPI rose by 0.9 in May, 1.2% in June. Those numbers will drop out of the 12-month comparison and be replaced by something much lower. And so I can see how CPI falls from, say, 4.9% to almost 4% when we get the print next week. And before the Fed meets in July, they meet at the end of July, but before they meet at the end of July, they're going to get the June CPI. And that 1.2% drops off, be replaced by something like 0.3 or so. And so what that means is that when the Fed meets at the end of July, you're going to see a weaker economy likely and inflation, headline CPI, say between, say, 3.2, 3.3, something like that kind of area, below 3.5%. So that tells me it's going to be hard for the Federal Reserve if they do pause next week, like everybody thinks now. It's going to be hard to, it might be harder to resume the hikes given that macroeconomic backdrop, lower inflation, less business activity, partly thanks to the tightening of financial conditions, either from the supply, treasury supply, the banks slowing down lending, and of course, you know, the Fed is still engaged in quantitative tightening.
So, Mark, regarding the Treasury market and that raising of the debt ceiling, a lot more Treasuries are going to come to the market next week, and a lot of people are saying, A, where are the buyers going to come from, and B, doesn't that mean that rates are going to go higher? What do you think about this?
Yeah, so you're right. There's, you know, there's sort of like as the Treasury Department was trying to deal with the looming debt ceiling and using these extraordinary measures to work around it, sort of they had to hold back on supply. And this week we've seen about $300 billion in T-bills being sold, cash management bills as well. And the market seemed to absorb that fairly well. The U.S. two-year note yield is up this week a little bit. We're talking about 5 or so basis points. Next week is even bigger supply, partly because we get the quarterly refunding as well. So if this week the U.S. raised about $300 billion, next week it's going to be closer to $400 billion. So far it's been absorbed fairly well. Say that in this week's auctions, only the four-week T-bill auction didn't show a sequentially higher bid cover and a higher participation from the indirect bidders. The thing to watch here to see how much of a tightening like impulse it is to watch the reverse repo operation. The Fed announces this every day, and this is a place where funds, banks can park money and get paid for it overnight. And that has been absorbing, say, as much as like $2 trillion. So if we see those numbers beginning to fall, that is less use of the reverse repo, that would suggest that the government's The Treasury supply is being absorbed by money that used to be parked in the reverse repo. So I'd be watching that to see the magnitude of the tightening.
Well, Mark, as far as the quantitative tightening and the Fed continuing on with QT, we haven't given that as much airtime, but it is something that could continue to go on even after they pause. How much runway do they have to keep, you know, shoring up their balance sheet in light of the fact that we could start hitting a rocky road in the economy moving forward, and some people are assuming that later in the year they may have to actually shift back to easing?
Yeah, this is how I would be thinking about this, is that it's true that the QT drains reserves, tightens liquidity, and it doesn't seem like we haven't had enough experience in how low can reserves go. What's the, where's the floor? And that's really what stopped the last round of QT, is they brought reserves down to levels that began being a problem. And so I think this is what we want to watch this time. And I think the first sign that QT is going to wind down, the first thing I'd be looking at, and I mentioned how for the to see the tightening of financial conditions that some of that money lead to reverse repo. The Federal Reserve also has a repo facility that's not really used that much right now. If we begin seeing the repo facility being used, that would tell me that we're running low on reserves. And so just on the back of the envelope calculation, I sort of suspect that the QT can continue until maybe September, October. And later this year, not clear exactly when, but I think you're right that somebody be watching for the Fed pauses, but probably stop the QT before they can cut interest rates.
So, Mark, what is your outlook for the second half of this year then? Let's summarize all of this. We talked about data. We talked about what central banks are going to be doing. And we dove into a few markets. Are you in the camp that says a recession is coming in the second half? Are you in the camp that says more of a market correction is coming in the second half, maybe hitting new lows after this last pullback last year? Summarize it for us then, please.
Yeah, you know, economists typically don't admit they're wrong. Many of you, you know, if you talk to economists, they don't admit they're wrong. What they really do is just push out the date of their forecasts. So last year is when I thought we'd have a recession. We did contract in the first two quarters of 2022, but that proved to be more of a statistical fluke, having to do with trade and inventories. Economy grew strongly in the second half of last year. It looks like it's growing well here in the first half of this year. I think we're at a peak here in Q2 this year. It looks like, say, something around 2.2% GDP here in Q2. I look for a softer economy into next year. So it's almost a reverse image of last year. Last year, first two quarters were weak. Second two quarters were stronger. Here in 2023, first half strong, second half maybe weaker. But to me, the problem is when you're thinking about the stock market and the U.S. economy, yeah, I don't know how to do it outside of this context in which I would highlight that next year is a presidential election year. And you can go back and look at how stock markets perform in presidential election years and how the economy does. It's hard to imagine that they would like have a recession without fighting back. So I am cautious about the economy as we enter the second half of the year. And I think that for me, the interest rate adjustment, when the market was pricing in 3 rate cuts, I thought that was excessive. I look for this rate adjustment for the markets basically to move to the Fed rather than the Fed to move to the markets. And I thought that the dollar would track that. And now that we've had that interest rate adjustment, I think the dollar is going to be weakening. But I know a lot of smart people out there who still focus on the wide, sort of, that the U.S. still has this relatively large premium that it offers against many of the other industrialized countries. And that premium prevents the dollar from falling much.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much for your time. A lot to take in here with all the data, central bank meetings, and market moves that we have seen over these last, to this week and heading into next week will be very interesting. Everybody, thanks for tuning in this weekend, and be sure to go back to our website and podcast to listen to all the daily editorials and company updates we recorded throughout the week. Dad and I love hearing from all of you, so please keep the emails coming. So Mark, everybody who tuned in, thank you very much for spending some of your weekend with us.
Thank you. Good luck to everybody.
For our upcoming appearance schedule, visit kereport.com. The Corlin Economics Report will be back in just a moment.
It's all too obvious. We're being let down by the institutions we used to trust. American families are talking about a future of food shortages, banks failing, society breaking down, and what seems like the setup for the apocalypse. But instead of throwing up their hands, folks are leaning into self-reliance, investing in emergency food storage now more than ever. And My Patriot Supply, the nation's largest emergency preparedness company, has made it easier than ever for you to have peace of mind knowing you're prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com and stock up on their best-selling 3-month emergency food kit. You get tasty breakfasts, lunches, and dinners averaging over 2,000 calories per day. Get at least one food kit for each family member. For a limited time, save $200 plus get free shipping on 3-month emergency food kits at MyPatriotSupply.com. It's time to prepare for what we all know is coming. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com now. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.